At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Do you all want to do an introduction to yourselves? During that time, I'll be able to boost the audio a little bit. Oh, and by the way, when you're introducing yourself, plug your socials and stuff too. Because if you're all artists, I mean, I know you could all use some promo too. So why don't we start from the beginning? The audio seems great now.
Okay. Okay, I'm Katie. I make music as Austra. What is my social media attached? I guess it's just at Austra, A-U-S-T-R-A. On Instagram. I'm in Toronto and I'm very happy to be here.
Awesome. You've already got fans in chat. Someone says, I love Austra.
Wicked.
Hey, I'm Spencer. I play in a band called The Ophelias and I am originally from Ohio, but now I live in New York. So I'm our token US resident here tonight. Yeah, also thrilled to be here. Our socials are at The Ophelias on like everything. And yeah, excited to talk about Yuma.
All right, and hi, I'm Reed. I'm in Victoria, BC on Lekwungen territory. And I play in the bands The Plodes and The This, both what you would expect. The Plodes on Instagram and on Bandcamp, The This Band on Instagram. And just this on Bandcamp, and that's where you find us.
Awesome. And what has brought all of you together this fine day?
Spencer, you go ahead.
UMA, the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers, is the thing that brings us together and brings us here. The Union of Musicians and Allied Workers is a solidaritous group of musicians and allied workers, as the name entails. We formed in, I think it was March or April of 2020, as a response to the No Music for ICE campaign. And then the people who kind of founded that said, hey, what if we talked about the music industry at large? And I was fortunate enough to be one of the earlier members. So I've been doing work with UMA for about a year, or more than a year. It's November now, time's fake, but year and change, I don't know. It's been really cool. There's a bunch of subcommittees. We have members here who are in all kinds of subcommittees, and we can tell you all about them. But that is what we are, what we do, try to make the music industry more just for everybody, including people who are headliners, people who are openers, people who make music in their bedrooms, producers, DJs, road crew, front of house, people who work at the pressing plants, who make vinyl, people who are janitors at venues, sound engineers, like everybody, because everybody deserves fair treatment, fair compensation, and a better and more just music industry.
Do you have any theremin players yet?
Probably.
Cool.
I don't know offhand, but
I mean,
we've got some experimental people. Yeah.
Theremins are cheaper than ever. I'm sure there's some member that has one.
Really? Oh, that's awesome.
Just law of averages, really.
Okay, well, before we get into...
I made one like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, cool. Before we get into the really good things that y'all are doing or trying to do and how we can help, why don't we start for people who aren't inside the music industry? Can you paint a little picture of what maybe things were like pre-COVID? What are working conditions like for musicians, especially up-and-coming musicians? Because I know most people think that it's kind of a like... For some people, it's a side gig or a hobby. For other people, it's their entire lives. But like any industry, it's incredibly predatory. So perhaps that would be the best way to introduce people. And then also, if you could explain how COVID changed the industry itself as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what COVID kind of revealed for a lot of musicians and a lot of artists was that almost all of our income had been coming from live performance. So when live performance was essentially canceled, it sort of magnified how little we were making through all the other avenues that exist. You know, from selling records, from streaming, from, you know, being signed with record labels. It just kind of revealed all of these big gaps and big holes. And I think that a lot of us had been too distracted with touring for so long to really pay attention to where a lot of our income streams were coming from. But I think once we started to really kind of look at the numbers and pay attention to what was happening, it became clear that artists are severely underpaid in this industry in relation to how much money it actually generates.
And do you mean specifically just like for the average person? I think to wrap their heads around it, we live in kind of the streaming age, right? So Spotify, iTunes, whatever it is, I'm assuming those aren't viable ways to make money in this industry.
No. I did the, if you look at the numbers, the average single Spotify play, it pays out to the artist about 0.4 of an American cent. So less than half of an American cent per play. And actually, Spotify is only one of many streaming services, what we call interactive streaming services, where you can just pick a song, play it, whatever you want. YouTube is actually the worst offender at 1/14 of a cent, approximately. And, you know, even artists that you've heard of, they probably aren't getting a whole lot out of Spotify. What they want you to do is buy their records and see them on tour. That's where our income still generally lies. The streaming services are basically ripping us off.
And do you feel that you're in a position where you have to use them regardless, though, just because it's the only way to get your names out there and promote yourselves?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at this point in time, you definitely kind of have to be on streaming services. I think it's the way a lot of people discover music. It's kind of the reason why it's problematic is that it's replaced or sort of overtaken so many other ways of discovering music, kind of just, you know, like tech companies in general, you know, how like Facebook kind of took over journalism or something like that. It's like you have companies like Spotify that you can't not be a part of because they've kind of, you know, have sort of squashed all the competition in a way, or they sort of have, like, you know, there aren't as many like indie music magazines anymore. Like people actually listen to radio less than they have in the past. Like it is just the main way that people sort of consume music now, so you really have to be a part of it. But I mean, yeah, the problem is that the deal that artists got to have their music on Spotify, artists didn't really have a role in making. So, you know, for many of us, like we didn't have a choice what the deal was going to be with Spotify. Many of us already had record contracts in place, and our records may have negotiated the deals, and the artist didn't really have a say and continue to not have a say. So even though Spotify exists on the work of musicians, you know, based on what musicians produce and musicians create, musicians have absolutely no say in how they're compensated and how they're treated and how their music is used on the platform.
And is it the same as the olden days? Because I've always got this image of the music industry where it's like, you know, you've got the big labels, the managers, and you want to be a star, don't you? And then they'll, you know, offer you some lucrative deal, which of course signs away all of your rights to your own work. And then they're the only ones who profit off it. Is it still that black and white?
I can, yeah. I mean, like a couple of the really big, like record labels, the, like, you know, top call it three record labels, got in on the ground floor with Spotify as they were like creating the Spotify app and the like, you know, creating Spotify. So those labels have like an incentive to use Spotify and to make Spotify a monopoly because they were got in on the ground floor and they are like tied into Spotify in ways that independent labels and independent artists just aren't. I mean, do you know the concept of pro rata?
No.
So this is something that blew my mind the first time I heard about it. Actually, the streaming subcommittee did a teach-in, which is how I learned about all of this, because they make it so incredibly unclear to every artist on Spotify what actually happens to your music and to your payments. So I went to a Spotify, Justice at Spotify subcommittee teach-in and learned about pro rata, which is best explained through this example. So say you go into your favorite local record store, you pop in, you're like, I'm going to buy a record from my favorite small band. It's so cool that they have their record in this record store. I want to support them. And you buy their record and you're like, sick. That money goes straight to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ignoring the, like, you know, paying the employees and all that. In this situation, let's just, you know, think that money goes straight to the band. So pro rata is like if 20% of that purchase of that vinyl record went to Ed Sheeran.
Why?
Instead of the like small band that you're purchasing the record from.
So why does Ed Sheeran get a cut personally?
Because those large labels got in on the ground floor and have a deal with Spotify. So right now, even though, like Reed said, artists are getting paid fractions of a cent per stream, but they're not even getting paid fully that amount per stream one-to-one ratio. Like, it's so little money for the amount that, like, per stream. It's insane to me. You know, it doesn't make sense. And so the Justice at Spotify campaign is asking for a penny per stream at a one-to-one ratio, which sounds like nothing, but compared to what is happening now, it would actually change the lives of like thousands and thousands and thousands of musicians.
Is it possible to make it in the industry without going down that route? Or is it basically like you have to accept this? It's the only way you'll become a breakout artist.
Well, I think that's like the interesting question, because for a lot of artists that already have a fan base and already have an established career, they have more flexibility to make those kinds of choices. You know, like when Taylor Swift was like, I'm not putting my album on Spotify, I'm exclusively Apple, or Beyonce's like, I'm exclusively Tidal, or like these kinds of artists can make these choices. But for up and coming artists who don't have a fan base yet, it's almost impossible to break through without being on streaming services. And yeah, I think the more, really, like, the, as I said, the less established you are, the more necessary it is to be on those platforms.
And here's what I'll say. I mean, I just put out a record with my band like last month, and I'm like, yes, please, Spotify, put me on a playlist. I also think that it's important to say, like, hey, we deserve fair compensation for our labor, and like, if we're getting you a whole bunch of streams, you should be paying us fairly for those streams. So you can't really, you know, if this is the only system that exists, it's not like, no one's going to be like, you absolutely cannot use Spotify or want Spotify to put you on playlists or anything like that. But like, it does just have to change, you know?
What about alternative revenue sources such as scoring for films, your music pops up in the TV ad, that kind of stuff?
Well, what's if I can chime in here, what's really interesting is that in the US, at least, not so in Canada since 1997, but in the US, if your recording is played on the radio, If you're the hold songwriting rights, you get royalties, but not if you own the recordings. The recording royalties are just non-existent for radio play in the States, and Canada has only had it since 1997, which not a lot of people know. And but yeah, so there's just lots of weird gaps in the royalty thing.
Yeah, and there's actually right now there's a bill in Congress, a really important bill in Congress that is being put forward to ensure that Americans get paid from radio the same way that Canadians have been getting paid since 1997. So, I mean, this will create a significant amount of income for musicians and for artists. And a lot of people just don't even know it's happening. They don't know it exists. And, you know, the thing about being a musician is that the way we make money is so complicated and so confusing. Nobody understands it. Like, nobody understands where all of our money comes from. I mean, even all of us here in UMA who've been kind of like learning about this and studying this for a long time, I think I can safely say that we understand parts of it, but like definitely not 100% of it. Like, and it's opaque and it's confusing for a reason. You know, like it's meant to be very difficult for musicians to understand. And so, yeah, that's a really significant point that this bill is going through Congress. It's called the American Music Fairness Act. And that's going to be a huge pay raise for musicians. And it's something that would be really important. And actually, as a Canadian, it's also going to be significant for international artists, because the fact that Canadians don't get paid to be on American radio is hugely influential. You know, like it's, we will get paid the same way that Americans will get paid if this American Music Fairness Act passes in Congress.
Does it have a chance?
Yeah, it does have a chance. And it's actually been a really, really long time coming. I mean, I don't know, I shouldn't speak on it with like much authority, but I know that it's been like decades in the works. And this is like lobbying from, you know, like people in Nashville, people in LA, like songwriters, like this is like old school music industry stuff that's like putting this together and sort of making it happen and pushing it through. And what we in UMA have been trying to do is include a segment or include something, somehow include streaming into the bill. But that, it seems like that's just going to be too complicated. It's like too much to ask for at once or something like that. Like this is already a big enough thing. It's like including streaming as well. It will just like overwhelm everybody. But yeah, it does feel like it's like 20 years too late, like this American Music Fairness Act. And we just really hope that with streaming, the legislation that needs to happen to sort of democratize it and make it more fair, we hope that it'll happen sooner. We hope that it won't take another 25 years to change that.
So on that note, I guess the majority of the money that is dependable and that comes into all artists is live performances, of which, unless you have a manager, I'm guessing that's the majority of your income.
Yeah, I mean, like I have a manager and I have a record label and I have booking agents and I have all of these things. And I mean, I can definitely say as an artist that the majority of my income does come from live touring. And it also comes from syncs. From like getting your song in a commercial, getting your song in a TV show, getting your song, like that kind of thing. That's like a really significant income for musicians. But like record sales, streaming, like that's pretty much negligible, unfortunately.
If you want to listen to your favorite artist's music, the best way is to either buy their record directly from them at a show, once if shows are happening, or on a platform like Bandcamp digitally, where or you can also send merch over Bandcamp, where the company Bandcamp only takes off like a bit off the top and leaves the majority to the artist. Mm-hmm. And also, since this is a source, I want to shout out a music streaming cooperative that we heard about a while ago called Resonate. So mm-hmm. you can go to the URL resonate, just the word, .is. And that is actually, it's fairly small as of now, but is a...
Cool.
It's a streaming platform where the artist signs up directly and becomes essentially part of the co-op. Kind of like how I believe you and I, Lance, are both members of Means TV. It's kind of a similar thing. That's another way. So, and then the royalties from that will be distributed more fairly. And also something I just found out about too is that in a few selected cities around North America, one of them being Edmonton, another being Eau Claire, Wisconsin, the local library system actually has streaming services set up that you can use at the library or sign up them. And they pay artists more than, to license their music, they pay their artists more than Spotify ever does.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's really cool.
I just learned about it, actually.
Yeah, that's awesome.
In the political education subcommittee, we have done a fair amount of readings about like music libraries and how great of an alternative those could be with the correct funding and infrastructure. So those are like two really great examples of that.
That's really cool. So along comes the pandemic, completely changes the way we interact with each other, completely ends the entirety of concerts, festivals, live music venues, you know, all that stuff. Obviously, I'm guessing has devastating effects upon the music industry specifically, but even more specifically upon independent artists who do not have a cushion to sit back on, do not have a whole bunch of TV commercials or, you know, all that other kind of stuff. I think even big artists like Deadmau5 became a Twitch streamer. Like everyone was just like, you know, just staying at home doing their thing. How do y'all survive if you're not part of that ecosystem?
Most of us have other jobs.
Fair enough.
I was actually lucky enough, you know, as a Canadian to get on CERB, right? As like I was washing dishes right when the pandemic, and I was making, if not minimum wage, slightly above. And I was, and you know, in this country, very lucky to get on CERB, which for those who don't know, was basically regular employment insurance, but like less restrictive, like. It's almost a basic income, everybody can have it, and then was able to get on regular employment insurance for a while. But and I was lucky to just recently find a job in my field, which is actually animation, recently. But most of us work regular jobs, and it is a stereotype, but it is true. A lot of musicians, apart from music or something in the arts, service industry jobs are the only thing they can find. And that's especially true actually for a lot of neurodivergent artists. It's a total systemic problem, like how wage labor itself is a whole systemic issue.
Well, I guess that would be a good time to introduce the union. How did the union come about, and how does it, in essence, try to protect you, the workers, from those trying to exploit you?
Yeah, so like I said before, it formed out of the No Music for ICE campaign originally, and then those, you know, small group of founders decided, hey, I think we should talk about more aspects of the music industry. And so we actually are... We voted today on incorporation status, so nice. It takes a long time, but it's good. We're getting incorporated. We are, you know, forming actual things that we can give back to our members, because as of now, the way that musicians are classified, the way that musicians are classified are as freelancers, which means that as a freelancer union, you want me to go into incorporation jargon?
Well, I mean, especially if it would be helpful to people who perhaps wanted to form their own unions, but I'd be more curious, like, have you worked towards being recognized as a union? And then what bargaining power have you tried to achieve in order to be able to try and protect the artists themselves?
Okay, so I can answer that with my... 501c45 jargon. So basically, since musicians are classified as freelancers, freelancer unions are not able to be classified as 501c5 unions, which is the type of union that is legally recognized by the NLRB as like a full union with bargaining power, with the ability to strike. And the reason why unions like SAG-AFTRA and unions like that that would now be considered freelancer unions are not considered freelancers unions is because they were kind of grandfathered in around the turn of the century-ish as these new kind of legal restrictions were placed on unions and forming unions and what the bounds of a union could be. So the PRO Act actually got introduced as a way for freelancers to create 501c5 unions or unions with bargaining power and ability to strike. But according to their definition of a freelancer, musicians don't fit that definition either. So we're kind of stuck in this middle ground between the inability to form a 501c5 union because we're freelancers, but also not fitting the legal definition of a freelancer according to the PRO Act. So where we landed was we are in the middle as a 501c4 union, which we are able to say because 501c4s can be unions and also classified as a nonprofit somehow, which means that we're able to collect dues, we're able to like work with government officials and like lobby for government issues and government change. We are able to be vocally supportive of candidates, of campaigns, of stuff like that. But then for the most part, because the legal restrictions that are placed on musicians and our ability to actually physically unionize, since musicians are all independent people and not under a singular employer, the best that we are able to do legally is to be there for each other, like in solidarity as a group, and do things like talk about what we're getting paid, advocate for higher payments in terms of like, you know, for example, the wage for an opening band has been a flat fee of like $200 or $250 since like 1992.
That's it.
And yeah.
No matter how many band members.
Nope. Not according to band members, not according to how long you drove to get there, not according to, wow, you know, anything. It's been a flat fee, $200, $250 since the early 90s, not, you know, no inflation adjustment, no nothing. So part of what we can do now is just be transparent with each other about things like payment and streaming and like, you know, our label relations subcommittee is a team of label workers and musicians working to make things like label contracts less confusing for people so they don't accidentally sign something that completely gives up their rights as an artist. We actually have a recording contract FAQ up on our website that our label teams did. It's amazing. It's so helpful. And like, you know, all the stuff that streaming has been doing, even if we're not able to be classified as a 501c5 union, we are able to say like, hey, you need to pay us more than you're paying us. And we're able to work with different people in the government. Rashida Tlaib signed on and has been very vocal in her support for the Justice at Spotify campaign. And so it just like, you know, because of the kind of restraints that are on us, we have to be a little bit creative in how we get our messaging across and what we're able to do. And it's kind of fun. It's interesting. It means that we get to be creative with how we think about things. And also, I mean, sorry, I know I'm talking a lot. I'll say one more thing. And then
it's all very important, though. Yeah.
My other people talk more about the union. But, you know, musicians have been told for years that there's not enough to go around, that there's not enough shows to go around, there's not enough sync spots to go around, there's not enough Spotify playlists to go around. If you get this opening slot for a band, that means that, you know, 20 other bands didn't get that spot because there's only one. And the thing that Yuma is trying to do is to say, like, that is artificial. It's artificial scarcity. There's enough to go around, and we just have to talk to each other and be transparent about, like, what's going on, what your booking agent's doing, what your label's doing, what you're doing as an artist, how you're paying your bandmates, like how you feasibly go on tour, how you financially afford things like merch, gas, you know, there's so much that goes into being an artist. And because artists are these little, you know, individual people all over the globe without like a singular, you know, under an employer, under an employer, you're there, you're talking to people, you're in the same space. It's easier to do something like form a union. But when you're just these kind of little people in each other's orbit, UMass trying to act as the place for people to come together and talk about the things that are important and talk about ways to be in solidarity with each other, even from across the globe.
Yeah, to Spencer's, to a lot of Spencer's points there, it has to be emphasized, like things were bad enough before the pandemic for musicians. She mentioned just now, like the cost of tour, and this applies to Canadians specifically. Well, Canadians and just non-Americans. One of my kind of like little pet issues is international touring. I founded the International Touring Subcommittee with my friend Sydney Koch, a fellow former Vancouverite, because what a lot of people don't know, what a lot of American musicians don't know, is that for a foreign artist to play in the United States, to come on tour and play even one show legally in the United States, you have to get expensive work visas and like approval from the Department of Homeland Security. I was doing the numbers just today. One solo musician, like one person with an acoustic guitar, if I were to take my acoustic guitar, go to Seattle, play one show and do it legally, and start from scratch, I would have to pay $1,000 or almost $1,000 Canadian in total, which is almost $800 USD. And that's because not only do I have to, pay a fee to the Department of Homeland Security to prove that, you know, I can come over legally and work, because that's what it is. The only union able to write that letter of recommendation to them is the American Federation of Musicians, or up here, the CFM. And they charge, an initiation fee of a couple $100 and then quite a bit of quarterly dues. So it adds up to, if I'm playing one show in Seattle, I better make more than $1,000. And, add $3,000 Canadian if I want to have that processed in less than 90 days. And it's not so lopsided when you go to other countries. Like for an American coming up to Canada, virtually no such restrictions exist. And, what also has to be emphasized is that, you know, the DIY punk band traveling in a minivan for gas money across the country is also in the music industry. Like if you play music for other people, if you record it in your bedroom, post on the internet, if you're scrubbing the toilets in a venue, you are part of the music industry. And it's like I said, a lot of DIY musicians don't get paid a lot. And if they want to not even make a living doing what they do, but just do what they want to do, it is needlessly restrictive financially. And it's another huge systemic issue. And in the venues committee as well, even if you do manage to like get into the States and get into a venue and play a show, there's a significant chance that, you know, the venue is not run properly. It's run exploitatively. It's run abusively. They stiff you on payment. They take too much of the door away. They're not transparent about anything they do. And that's the thing we address in the venue relations committee as well.
Very interesting. Outside of the ability for you to all obviously have solidarity amongst yourselves and everything, is there ever going to be an opportunity where you get to negotiate with labels themselves or people like managers of venues and stuff like that?
I mean, we negotiate with every time we sign a recording contract, we're negotiating with a label. Any sort of record deal that you make will be a negotiation. Like, presumably the artist has a lawyer and the label has a lawyer and there's a negotiation in place. But there's just such an intense power imbalance whereby, you know, often labels are talking to young artists who have no idea what's going on and who are just so excited to be signing to a record label that they'll sign away anything. And, you know, I'm one of those people. I signed a record label in my early 20s, a record deal in my early 20s. I didn't really understand the scope of what I was signing. And now I'm in my late 30s and I still don't own the rights to anything I've ever created in my life. And I won't own the rights to it for a long time. You know, and if I was aware of like the long-term implications I'd be signing up for at the time, I think I really would have questioned whether or not signing that contract was the right thing to do. And that's one of the reasons that Yuma is so incredible, because it just allows artists to sort of communicate what I'm saying right now. You know, like I'm talking to the 22-year-olds that are about to sign big record deals and say, you know, these things that may not seem like a big deal right now are going to be a big deal in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And it's just really important for artists to communicate, to just kind of just reduce exploitation, really. And just like, as long as musicians and artists have information, and as long as they have sort of solidarity with other artists, then they'll be less able to be taken advantage of, which I think is super important.
So you'd recommend any young artist starting up in the business, doesn't matter what kind of music you're getting into, to join the union first and foremost, so you can learn a whole bunch of stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the resources available on the UMA website are incredible. And like the resources about streaming, and as Spencer's been saying, all the stuff about signing a record deal, like the record label FIQ, that stuff is invaluable to know as a young artist, and even just to really connect with other artists and to ask them questions. You know, it can also be like very isolating, like you know, if you live in a small town or something like that, and like someone writes you on the internet, some like record label from like New York City's like, hi, I want to sign you. It's like, you have no idea who to talk to. You have no idea where to gain advice from. And this is just like a place where any artist can come and just ask questions and just connect with other people.
That's awesome. And there's no threshold. Like you don't have to have already, you know, released a couple albums or played a couple shows. It's just come one, come all.
Come one, come all. If you have written a single song and you're like, I think I like this. If you've never written anything and you work at a music venue, come. Like, we value everybody's insight onto all of these things because we have to work together as a team of people.
Even SoundCloud members.
Yeah, just kidding. Everybody except, no. I'm
yeah, and I think it's just important to remind artists that we actually do hold a lot of power and a lot of influence. And a lot of the people that we work with, you know, they don't want to be perceived in a bad light. They don't, like, none of these agencies, labels, these, whatever they're called, Live Nation-y type companies, like the live performance companies, like, none of them want bad PR. None of them want artists being like, these people are exploiting us. So really, if it becomes public and it becomes visible and more people know about it, I think it will actually lead to positive change, because nobody will continue to allow this to happen as long as it's being sort of constantly talked about and constantly like brought up. Like the people who work in the industry, they aren't necessarily monsters. It's just a broken industry. It's an industry that is just rife with exploitation, and that's just the way it is, but it's not the way it has to be.
Doesn't everyone hate Live Nation? Or is that just me? I've never met a single person, artist or customer. Yeah, no, it's like on both ends, everyone despises them. But this is a total sidebar. I just like, I cannot believe how they always manage to invent new things. Like, you'll be like, okay, I get to buy a ticket, and then it's like surplus charge, cool. And then it's like web fee. You're like, weird, but all right. And then it's like recycling fee. Like, okay, what? And then by the end of it, it's like $70 in addition to my initial ticket. Like, I can't believe this shit. And I'm assuming not a dollar gets seen by any of y'all at the end of the day. Yeah. Cool stuff. Well, why don't we use the last couple of minutes I have left to explain the drive? Because I think that's the most important thing coming up.
Yes.
Yeah, so we have two new member meetings coming up. One of them is tomorrow at, 5 p.m. PST, 8 p.m. EST, and then another one on Sunday, November 7th at noon PST, 3 p.m. EST. And that's how you join UMod. Just come to a new member meeting, get acquainted with all of the different subcommittees. We have reps from every subcommittee to talk about things. We've got, you know, subcommittees like the Abolition Subcommittee and the Label Subcommittee, venues, education, all of the different locals. So far, I think it's LA, New York, Texas, Chicago. Canada is in the works, right?
Yeah, we do need more Canadian members, actually. There's only a select few active Canadian members. Philly is another local. A lot of members are from Philadelphia.
And we also have affinity groups. We've got a Black members group, BIPOC group, LGBTQIA group, neurodivergency group.
Nice.
Yeah, just a bunch of, and those are less like, let's get together and talk about like how awful the music industry is for, you know, blank group. It's more of like an affinity group where we just kind of hang out and make friends and talk about like, you know, being LGBTQIA or being neurodivergent. And it's a lot of fun. And then the rest of the groups, we talk about how we can change the world. But
it's not just the US and Canada that we're targeting. Anyone anywhere in the world if they want. I don't know if this was necessarily the intent of the founding, but I like to think of it as the Wobblies, the IWW for musicians. Like,
oh wow,
anywhere in the world, that's you a can bold join thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think there's some comparisons personally.
You Mobblies? Is that Mobblies? Anything?
could be. We'll vote on it.
Oh, we will.
And so where can anyone who's watching right now find this that's taking place tomorrow on Sunday if they're either a young musician or aspiring musician and they want to get involved?
You can go to our website. There's a tab that says Join Us, and there's a little form to fill out. You'll get an email with a Zoom link, and that is where it all happens.
And it's the URL is unionofmusicians.org. All one word, unionofmusicians.org.
Thank you, Reed.
Yeah, I was like, and the URL, please, because we'll throw that on first. But I've had it on the screen the entire time. So anyone who's watching this, please go join the unionofmusicians.org, or at least if you want to check it out and get more information. And could each of y'all do a shout out to your individual bands, Instagrams, and SoundClouds and all that? So anyone who wants to hear your music can do that too.
Yes. I went last, so I'll go first.
Sure.
I'm in two bands, The Plodes and The This, PLDS, The Plodes and The This. The This is notoriously hard to Google, but search The This Band on Instagram and thethis.bandcamp.com, and then theplodes.bandcamp.com, The Plodes on Instagram. Those are the easiest ways to get at us. And who's next?
My name is Spencer. I am the front woman of a band called The Ophelias. We are at The Ophelias on Instagram, Twitter. I think we're The Ophelias Band on Facebook, if anybody's still on Facebook.
I would be meta.
Yeah, and we're on, you know, Bandcamp and all of that. I'm on TikTok if you're a TikTok person, but barely on TikTok, so don't hold me to it.
And I'm Katie. I make music as Austra. I'm just, my website is Austra, austra.fyi. I hope that it's still active. I noticed the other day I forgot to pay my web maintenance fees and it went down. So maybe it's up. We'll see, but you can also find it on various streaming platforms.
We don't make any money from our streaming.
Yeah,
but
you should still stream it as much as you can. Even though
I was also going to say if they have Bandcamps, please use that first chat, because apparently all the money goes directly to them instead of to Spotify, which is much better.
The vast majority of it.
Okay, that is way better. Well, thank you so much. I hope a bunch of people find out and join. And thanks for all the hard work you're doing, because obviously I think this is something that's sorely lacking amongst YouTubers, Twitch streamers, you name it. If there's just a giant artist collective, it's very hard to get any kind of workers' rights or bargaining rights or even be respected as a worker in that industry, because a lot of people just think it's Mickey Mouse stuff.
Exactly.
Well, and no, but I'm being totally genuine. Yeah. I think you're doing very important work by doing this.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm an animator. I do the Mickey Mouse stuff.
Okay. Well, there you go. All right. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having us on. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye.
So you've just been listening to an episode of The Surf Times, and if you enjoy it and want to see The Surf Times, you can go to wearesurfs.com or watch the live shows at thesurfs.tv. And also everywhere social media is sold, basically thesurfs.tv, you'll find us there, twitter.com/thesurfstv, for example. It would also help us out tremendously if you could leave a good review of this podcast if you enjoyed it, either on, I don't know, iTunes or wherever you're podcasting. Apparently it does help, and yeah, we hope to see you soon.
To our gods, Xander Corvus and Peyton L. Joost, we will build a ladder to heaven to deliver you the daily news. To our monarch, Tom Spiker, we are your most humble of clownish jesters. To our lords, Trevor R. and Alexander Thaler, you have our undying fealty. To our knights of the round table, Nate, that one guy, Hagbird Celine, Matthew Scarborough, Stellar Vision, Ariana McCarthy, Daniel Sutton, Ants Are Still Running the World, Coulter Smith, Tom Groh, Val 9000, Jenna Tal, Quiet 185, Anna Loves Riley, Riley and Anna, Omni, Poodlehawk, The Tim Caucus, Multimondi, Trevor Janis, Lemmy 101, Anthropofojack, Saren 42, Chronic to Hemphog, Catherine, Radical Maniac, Ramon Acosta, Incosin, Violent Orchard, Sophie Baby, Political Puppy, Andreas Chiringuito, Zach Christensen, Josh Mickelson, Todd Buckingham, and Todd Lajeunesse. We shall meet you in the tavern, and we raise a drink, and we salute you.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.